Good day, and welcome to the DAE Investor Relations conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. A replay will be available on the DAE website. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Sinan Kaya. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning and good afternoon, everyone. My name is Sinan Kaya, and I am responsible for Fixed Income Investor Relations. Welcome to the conference call to discuss DAE's full year 2019 results. Our discussions in this call may include forward-looking statements, and we refer you to the disclaimer on slide two, which talks about this in further detail. There will be two speakers today, Feroz, our CEO, and Jennifer, our CFO. After the speakers' remarks, there will be a Q&A session, and I will now hand you over to Feroz to provide an overview of our performance.
Thank you, Sinan, and let me extend my welcome to everybody on the call. This is the call for our full year 2019 results. What I'm going to do is use page three of the presentation that is up there to provide my overall comments, and then, as usual, I will hand it over to Jennifer to kind of walk us through the specifics of the presentation. So let me just start off by putting this in context. 2019 was the second full year of operations since we acquired AWOS in August of 2017. And I think from my standpoint, it's fair to say that the franchise has been firing on all cylinders for the last couple of years, and you see that in the numbers. So speaking of the numbers, we're clocking revenue north of $1.4 billion, pre-tax profits north of $400 million. We're doing that with a very modest leverage level. We measure that as net debt to equity, which stays just above two and a half times. We try to do very steady margins, which we express as pre-tax profit margins, which hover just at the 30% mark. And return on equity now is kind of north of 12%, has been that way for a fairly long period of time. Now, these are the metrics that we said we would hit, and I think we've been hitting them kind of quarter in, quarter out. While doing that, we've also done two other things to strengthen the quality of our balance sheet. One, we've boosted the liquidity of the company. So today, available liquidity stands at $2.4 billion, and we've also boosted the use of unsecured debt in our financing, which now stands at 62% from a standing start of zero a couple of years ago. And I have to say that all this makes us feel very good about where we are with our balance sheet, but more importantly, this has garnered the requisite attention and recognition from the external counterparties as well. So a manifestation, excuse me, of that in 2019 was Fitch assigned an investment-grade rating of BBB- in July. KBRA upgraded the senior unsecured debt rating to BBB+ in October, and Moody's, a couple of weeks ago, upgraded the senior unsecured rating to investment-grade Baa3. That's all extremely gratifying from our perspective. From a business perspective, 2019 was a breakout year for our managed asset business, as I think those of you who follow us know that we received a very large $1.4 billion mandate. We believe the largest in the industry from one of the world's largest investment managers to source and manage assets for them. And as a result of that, we now managed or are mandated to manage somewhere around 125 aircraft. And that is a sizable footprint, but we expect this footprint to go even more in the coming years. I would like to make a couple of comments about the market environment that we see and particularly what that means for us in 2020. So firstly, let me start off by saying that our outlook for the industry in general in 2020 remains extremely positive, but we note that recent events in China are definitely going to create near-term headwinds, and I think some of those headwinds have yet to fully emerge as we monitor a situation that, of course, is evolving. The impact on aviation in general, I think, is likely to be material if we don't see things or clarity in the next few weeks, and that's entirely possible as well. But I think this is a situation that we all monitor, but the implications are quite significant given the immediate linkage between what's going on and people not wanting to be on planes, etc. You know, our customers who are impacted by this will expect some relief, and we will kind of work with them on a case-by-case basis as that happens. For us, then we talk about how we are going to grow our franchise, and I think, as again, for those of us who follow us, we have said in the past that the economics of placing a speculative order have not been that great, and I think as we stand here today, we would say that those economics have become even more unappealing. So we don't see a path to committing speculative capital in the near term to an OEM order. And I think, you know, we've said before that the OEM business model of sales to lessors is not working, and I think we would expect to see some changes in that for us to actually participate in a meaningful way. We've talked in the past about inorganic growth. When we look at that, we say that inorganic growth always is an option for us, but we don't see anything currently that is compelling that we would characterize as something that would enhance our franchise. So our focus in 2020 is going to be on all the non-OEM channels, and our expectations based on the pipeline that we have at the moment is that we will be booking somewhere in the $1.5 to $2 billion of new assets in 2020. Our hope is to be at the high end of that range. And our sales, which were quite aggressive in 2019, will moderate a little bit in 2020, and we expect to sell somewhere between $500 million and $1 billion of assets in 2020. Let me just, I want to say a couple more things, and then I will turn it over to Jennifer. I think it is fair to say that we are very excited by the franchise that we've built so far and the franchise that we are building. Our aim is to offer a completely different kind of market strategy, which is based on our strengths and our platform, which ultimately allows us to increase the market standing that we have in the industry. And when we look at market standing, we look at our owned and managed portfolio of $15 billion, and that makes us kind of the fifth or the largest presence if you look at it from that standpoint. And as we look at 2020 and 2021, we feel that we're extremely well positioned to change that and to increase our market presence even more through the origination channels that I described a minute ago. So we're very pleased with where we are today, and we're very excited at what the next 2 years are going to mean for this particular franchise as we push ahead with organic growth, which is right now the best producing answer for us. So let me stop there, and let me now turn it over to Jennifer Creevy, who is our Chief Financial Officer.
Thank you, Feroz, and I'll just move now on to slide 4 to provide a more detailed analysis of our fleet. At the end of December, the total fleet was 357 aircraft, which consisted of 289 owned aircraft, 65 managed aircraft, and 3 committed aircraft. In addition, as Feroz mentioned, we have a mandate to source additional aircraft to bring DAE to over 400 aircraft. During the year, we purchased 11 aircraft and sold 34 aircraft from our owned fleet. At the end of December 2019, our average fleet age was 6 years, and our average remaining lease term was 6.3 years, both based on CMV. 86% of our fleet is passenger aircraft, and our fleet utilization at the end of 2019 was 100%. Moving on to slide 5, where we provide a more detailed analysis of our customers. Our regional analysis shows that we are very well diversified, and this is in line with what we would have seen in prior quarters, with 26% of our fleet in the Middle East, 24% in Asia Pacific, 15% in Europe, and 14% in the Americas. This is then followed by Africa at 8%, 7% in China, and 6% in South Asia. You will note in the graphs on the right-hand side of the page that we provide analysis both by the number of aircraft and also by value of aircraft. Our largest customer, based on value of aircraft, is still Emirates at just under 12%, and Gulf Air is at second at 8.2%. I'll now move on to slide 6, which shows our income statement for the year ended 31 December 2019 compared to the prior period to the end of December 2018. Operating profit for the year was $785.9 million, up $2 million on the prior year, and the primary reason for this increase year on year was due to gains on sale of aircraft. Overall revenue for 2019 was $1.42 billion, down slightly on the prior year. Within this, our lease revenue is at $1.33 billion, a slight decrease on 2018, primarily due to a lower number of revenue-generating aircraft in the fleet and increased amortization costs of lease incentive assets. This was offset by increased maintenance revenue relating to end-of-lease compensation, which we received during the year compared to 2018. Juramco revenue has also increased to just under $82 million from $67 million in the prior year. 94% of our lease revenue was fixed, which is up from 89% at the end of 2018. Our top five customers represent 29% based on lease revenue. Gain on disposal of aircraft was $84.7 million for the full year 2019, compared to $52 million in the prior year, a favorable variance of just under $33 million. We sold 34 aircraft in 2019, compared to 26 in 2018. But to note, 31 of these aircraft that were sold in 2019 were sold to third parties where management was retained by DAE. Overall expenses for the year ended December 2019 were $720.2 million, compared to $705 million in the prior year, an increase of just 2.2%. The main increase within these expenses was on depreciation and amortization line and also on higher cost of providing engineering maintenance services, and this is in line with the increased revenue we saw from Juramco. General and admin expenses have decreased to just under $84 million in 2019 compared to $90 million in the prior year, and this is due to ongoing tight control of our cost base. Our SG&A as a percentage of revenue stands at 6% at year end. Now looking at overall net finance costs, which have increased in 2019 to $372.3 million, up from $355 million in the prior year. Within this, though, the primary reason for the increase is due to the fact that our finance income decreased by $58.7 million, down to $61.9 million in 2019. This related primarily to lower gains on financial instruments and the movement in the fair value of derivatives during 2019. Finance expense decreased by $41.5 million to $434.2 million. And this is primarily due to savings on interest expense, which reduced due to the decrease in total loans and borrowings, which have gone from $9.3 billion at the end of 2018 to $8.3 billion at the end of 2019. This then gives us a profit before tax of $413.6 million compared to $428.9 million. And our pre-tax profit margin was 29% for the year. Overall profit after tax was $377.5 million, which is favorable to the prior year. Our adjusted EBITDA was $1.35 billion compared to $1.347 billion for the prior year. And this gives us an adjusted EBITDA margin of 96% compared to 94% at the end of 2018. Within Q4 itself then, we generated a profit after tax of just under $117 million, compared to $82.5 million in the same quarter in 2018. And the increase in quarter four was driven primarily by gains realized on the sale of aircraft to Falcon 2019 of $53 million and lower financing costs. I'll then move to slide 7, where we look at our financing in more detail. Total loans and borrowings were $8.3 billion at the end of 2019. As mentioned before, we have changed the profile of debt on our balance sheet over the last year in line with our objective to increase the level of unsecured debt in the company as we moved towards investment grade ratings. Total unsecured debt is $5.2 billion at the end of 2019, which is made up of our outstanding bonds, term loans and drawn revolving credit facilities. Our secured debt is now $3.2 billion. We have access to $2.2 billion of undrawn facilities at the end of December 2019, which includes our revolving credit facilities and term loans. Our average cost of debt at the end of 2019 was 4.5%. 62% of our fleet is now unencumbered, with a book value of $6.8 billion for 178 unencumbered aircraft. This compares to 138 aircraft at the end of 2018. Looking at our funding and liquidity in further detail then on slide 9. Total available liquidity is $2.4 billion. The small difference between what we showed on the previous slide is due to the cash that we also have available. But as you will see, this has increased significantly from $800 million at the end of 2017 to $2.4 billion available liquidity at the end of 2019. Our unsecured debt is now 62%, up from 23% at the end of 2017. And this gives us a very large amount of flexibility as we move forward into 2020. Secured debt as a percentage of total assets was 24% at the end of the year, down from 34% in the prior year. Turning then to our balance sheet and further detail on slide 9. As we have stated, we have shown consistent high level of performance throughout the last number of years, and this is shown by the metrics above. Total assets for the group are now $13.5 billion at the end of 2019, and this small reduction is due to the lower number of owned aircraft in the fleet. The group's total equity is $3.1 billion at the end of 2019, and this is reduced following the repurchase of shares, offset by profits earned during the year. Our net debt to equity now stands at 2.64 times at the end of 2019, and our pre-tax return on equity is 12.6%. Our strong metrics have led, as Rose mentioned earlier, to DAE now having investment grade ratings from Kroll, Fitch, and more recently from Moody's. I will now hand back to Rose for further comments before opening the line for Q&A.
Well, we can go straight to Q&A.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for a brief moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We will now move on to our first question. Comes from Rino Bianchi of Cantor Fitzgerald. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, good morning or good afternoon, and thank you for taking my question. I actually have three questions. The first one, the most important one, I think you mentioned, not surprisingly, that there are some headwinds in China. But, you know, the good news is you have, comparatively speaking, a very small exposure to China, only 7% of the net book value of your fleet. On the other hand, what I'm wondering is, to what extent have you seen some contagion risk happening, meaning some airline based outside of China also experience pressure and coming to you to ask you for concession?
Reno, thank you. Good to hear from you again. There is definitely that because, as you know, there are many carriers in the region that rely on outbound traffic from points in the region. So we if this continues for a lot longer, we expect that to happen.
Is there any kind of region then you think is a significantly greater risk? I mean, I don't know how you define China, whether China include Hong Kong or, you know, Singapore or some of the other stuff. But do you think then regionally there is some segment that worry you more than others?
I think it's an evolving situation. We have to kind of keep an eye out for it. But this is, you know, for example, the Korean Ministry of Health and Welfare put out a travel advisory. There is a implication for that to other airlines that serve Korea as well. So I think it's just kind of we will wait and see what happens. Generally speaking, airlines will find a way to deal with it. But, you know, when people don't fly, it's a special circumstance that we will discuss case by case.
I appreciate your answer. My second question related to bond repurchases. If I did my math right, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think you engaged in any meaningful bond repurchases in the last quarter. I think the program to date is still around $450 million, so we're a little bit shy of the original target of $600 million. What is your thinking with respect to further market repurchases of your bond?
At prices above par, it does not make sense for us. So we have not been in the market.
Just a question of kind of values, basically?
We have to balance the accounting hit with the economic benefit. At this point, the trade-off is not compelling.
I understand that. My final question, I saw that Fiji Airways made the top 10, actually jumped to third spot. Is that uniquely related to the delivery of a second A350-900, or have there been more aircraft delivering to Fiji Airways?
It's the two A350s.
Okay. Thank you so much for taking the time to answer my question.
Most welcome.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to queue for a question, please signal by pressing star followed by one. That is star one to queue for a question. It appears we have no questions over the audio. I'd like to turn the call back to Feroz Tarport. Apologies. We have one question.
Okay, no worries, John. Go ahead, John.
Apologies, sir. I would now like to turn the conference back over to Feroz Tarapore. Please go ahead, sir.
John, could you just check the question queue to see if there is anybody else on there? Oh, I see.
Yeah, sir, it appears we don't have any questions over the phone.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, listen, in that case, thank you so much, everybody, for attending. And again, you know where to reach us if there are any subsequent questions. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.